You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome to My Vagina. This is Jessie Karen.
And this is Rebecca Frank. And here we are again having our current historical, hysterical, and infuriating conversation about our lives as vagina-having organisms.
All content made up on the spot, but probably researched. Just kidding, fools. It's definitely researched. Hey Rebecca, how's it going virtually?
Oh, it's going all right. You know, been spending a little bit of time at home recently. How about you?
Doing the same, you know, all voluntary. Cool. Today we are super excited to bring an interview that we did before all the quarantining with Hallie Lieberman.
Oh yeah, she's awesome. Actually, it's a cool story because I was checking out the New York Times one day and there was this op-ed there from Hallie Lieberman all about the history of sex toys and how the story about the vibrator that we talked about early on our hysteria episode, I think, and then Jessie mentioned that the information was wrong a little bit later. It was all debunking that. And we found out that she also wrote a book about the history of sex toys. So we emailed her and she agreed to talk to us.
It's freaking fascinating.
It's so fucking cool. And this book is amazing.
Highly recommended. Very entertaining.
It's called Buzz.
And before that, we're going to talk about some fun things that we've been doing to keep ourselves sort of sane.
Yeah.
In isolation.
Yeah.
Outside of me dancing with the cat that I'm watching because I have nothing better to do. I was quarantined for almost 2 weeks and I started to forget that I was human.
Oh, no. But you're feeling better now.
I feel great. Killing it. I can smell everything.
Yay. Jessie's back. I was talking to Ashley the other day and I told her that every morning when I can smell my own shit, I'm like thankful.
Right? Exactly. That was the first thing I smelled. I was like, yes, poop. I'm also going to say this because I feel like the sound is going to be a little bad on mine. So I'm just going to say everyone bear with us because we're obviously all recording remotely.
It's a different scenario, but we want to keep bringing you guys stuff. So
what have you been doing?
The coolest thing I think that I've done is that on Friday night, my brother Aaron made a pub quiz. And so a bunch of us all called into a Zoom call and we did a trivia.
That sounds so fun.
It was really fun. And the winner got to choose a charity of their choice. And then my brother donated $50 to that charity.
Love.
Yeah.
Love that. Should do that on Sip Tip Survive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
Perfect segue. So I started this initiative called Sip Tip Survive because we're all missing our favorite bartenders right now. And the feeling of just chatting about nothing or anything that isn't Corona related, or at least Corona related in a really sad, depressing way. Right. So it's kind of a reprieve of that. So, you know, we've been having bartenders come on and show you how to make pandemic pantry cocktails, like whatever you have, or we can play trivia with you. People have been calling in and playing their music. It's been a really fun way to virtually interact with people.
If you all are interested, you could sign into Instagram Live at Sip Tip Survive pretty much any day after 4, and there will be somebody there. And if we have any bartenders as listeners, send Jessie a message.
Yeah, please. The whole idea is to hopefully have out of work people making a little bit of money because we've all been sitting on that unemployment call for hours at a time. And it's even if we get it, it's not going to help as much as having a job. So yeah, if you're out of work, please contact DM at SipTipSurvive or get us on SipTipSurvive@gmail.com and comment if you are, and also if you have a job at home, please consider donating to all the industry people who have listened to you and bought you shots and cleaned up your vomit.
Yeah. And with that.
And with that, we're going to go talk about some vibrating things. Operated boy, made of plastic and elastic. He is rugged and long lasting. Who could ever, ever ask for more? Yay. Thank you so much for coming, Hallie.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here.
This book is fucking fantastic.
It's really good.
Aw, thank you.
Can we start off with you telling us about yourself and how you got into sex toys?
Yeah, of course. So my sex toy origin story is when I talk about in the book is when I was a little kid, 11 years old, and vacationing with my parents in the Keys. Mm-hmm. And I like rifling through drawers to find stuff. Like,
who doesn't?
To find, yeah, who mm-hmm. doesn't? I mean, to look for, you know, the Bible. One hotel we were in, I found Martina Navratilova's autobiography instead of a Bible. And that's how we found out we were in a gay hotel.
Yeah.
And that, which I thought was awesome that yeah. they replaced it. It's like, this is the equivalent of her autobiography. But anyway, so I found this like thing in a zippered package and I thought it was a pencil sharpener because I was 11. And I was like, Mom, look what I found. I took it out of the package and waved in the air. And she said, Hallie, put that down. Like she thought it, I mean, she knew what it was because it was a vibrator.
Right.
And I was like, why? It's so cool. And anyway, and so I didn't know what it was at the time. Then a few years later, I figured out, I don't know how, that this was a vibrator. I was like, oh my God, that had so much power. My mom's face when she saw it, how mad she was at me. Mm-hmm. I need to know more about these things. And so that was mm-hmm. my origin story.
Yeah. That's so crazy to me because I remember finding my mom's going to kill me. I remember finding my mom's like box full of like sex toys.
Box?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Box. That's awesome. My mom didn't have a box of sex toys.
And that's the thing is like now I think back and I'm like, get yours, Mom.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
Yeah.
But at the time, I remember finding this stuff and me and my friends were like, what is this crazy stuff? And I remember her being so livid and so angry and so mad at me that she was like, you know, use the big D word, disappointed.
Oh, no. Oh.
And I was like crushed, you know? But it's so interesting to me, like how
I was not thinking that she was going to use that
big D
word.
I said the big D, and I was like, "Whoa, your relationship was awesome."
I know. I wish that's why I made sure to say disappointed. After.
Yeah,
so I was like, "Right. We're talking about dildos." But it sucks that like she had to be because she was probably just like so ashamed that I found it, which is so sad.
Yeah,
that she had to feel that way.
I mean, how old were you? I'm curious.
Ooh, I must have been like 13, probably 12, 13, 14.
Ooh, good yeah. age to find a box of dildos.
Yeah, I was very yeah. curious about it. I wasn't after that, but
we did an episode like way early on. My mom listens to the podcast where I was telling this story about how I went away for a year or something. I went backpacking and I came back and I had a vibrator in my end table drawer and I came back and it was gone. And I was convinced that my mom had thrown it out. So I was talking about it. I was like, I don't know, like if she, I don't know why she would. My mom's like one of those people where I have my, if I get any mail still delivered to their house, even if it's obviously junk, she will not open it without asking for my permission.
My mom's like that too.
Yeah, Jewish people. So.
My mom's Christian, but yeah.
Anyway, so I was like, it's so weird that she would throw it out, but she must have, because I don't know how else could have done it. So I go on, so I tell this whole story and whatever, we carry on. I get a phone call from my mom like the day after it released and she goes, Rebecca, I don't know what to tell you, but I did not throw your vibrator away. So I still don't know
who did it.
Was it my dad?
I got this image in my mind that is not good, but of what happened to it with your dad.
Oh, I know. It's okay. He does not.
He's not allowed to listen to this episode.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So her mom tells him which ones he can listen to.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Frank.
Hi, Mom.
Oh my God, my dad read this article about where I had like sent it to him and I talk about pegging my ex and I'd forgotten. Yes. I talked about it in there, but like he didn't care and we've never mentioned it.
Yeah.
Like, and then I was on some other podcast where I talked about pegging my current boyfriend. I'm like, God, my parents, yeah. and they listened to it. they must think I'm obsessed with pegging. And they'll probably hear this and be like, I'll have to Google it again. And then they'll like go into therapy to forget what it is.
They're going to have it like as one of their favorite insights. They're going to keep Googling pegging. What is pegging? Just a reference point constantly open.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's same with glory holes. I've had to explain that to my mom so many times.
Oh, my God. Honestly, oh, I love it. That your mom's curious.
Oh, yeah. And then she'll be like, Hallie, we're eating dinner. Like, we have to talk about glory holes.
Oh, you're the best dinner guest.
Oh, maybe. Depending on who's at dinner.
You're my best dinner guest. Yeah. Oh, do you want to come home for Thanksgiving? That'll really shake things up at my house.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
Well, what do your parents think? Like, welcome to my vagina podcast. Do they tell people?
Ooh, no, my mom does not.
Oh, okay.
My mom's kind of started to get on board, actually. She does, like, she knows that I do it. I don't think she listens or watches, but she knows that I do it. And, like, she was curious about, like, the etymology of pussy, so we did.
Oh.
She was like, where did that word come from? And she was like, you should do it on your podcast. And I was like, great, yeah, I'll do it. Sure. So we did that for her, but I don't think she listened to it.
Yeah. My mom listens, which is cool. My mom listens, my brother and my sister all listen. My dad tried listening and then sat me down for a heart-to-heart about, like, how he couldn't listen.
Oh.
And I was like,
that's important.
Yeah, I was like, you know what?
I respect that.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? That's okay.
I wish he could, but.
Yeah, I know. It's
funny. At least
funny.
He mentioned it.
Yeah.
He tried.
Yeah, he was like, I just feel like I'm, like, I don't want to know about this, you know, more specifically about, like, my personal stuff, which I don't talk about too much on the podcast anyways, but I think he's just nervous about it. But he does. Jesse does. But he does call me up sometimes and give me marketing ideas.
Aww.
So he supports how he can.
Yeah.
Yeah. He supports how he can.
That is so sweet. My mom is just terrified I'm going to say something bad about her, like that she was a bad mom.
No.
And I'm like, Mom, you are the best mom ever. I was like a demon asshole child. So like, that's like all I'll be talking about. And then she'll be like, you weren't an asshole. And I was like, yes, I was. But that's what they're worried about. Even though they're like not sex, like progressive people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like they've just become proud of me, which is weird.
No, that's amazing. Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did they read the book?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
But my next book, which is about gigolos, I was
I'm
like
so excited.
Caitlyn Jenner removed the big chunk of her book before sending it to some of the Kardashians because she like talked shit about them. And then got caught. I was thinking of removing the part where I get a rub and tug massage from my book that I send to my parents so they don't read it because I think that would make them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's okay. I don't think they would be shocked.
Yeah.
It would take a lot to shock my parents.
Yeah.
Even if I transition, they'd be like, oh, okay. Like I feel like it'd be really hard for them to be shocked by me.
Cool.
Well, that's nice.
I guess.
But that's some nice acceptance there.
Well, that's because I've been saying penis since I was 4 years old around the house.
Yes. Oh my God, I wish that was my first word.
Oh my God.
It was like my third, because I told an interviewer, I was like, oh, I told a mom that I used to say penis at age 7 all the time. She's like, 7? You were 4, Hallie. Get that right.
Oh my God.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize it was that young. She's like, you were precocious.
Honestly, she would remember. If my kids started saying penis at 4 years old, I'd remember that.
Yeah. My mom used to take me to the grocery store, and when I was like super little, like probably 4, and I would be in the front of the cart, and I would just point at people and say penis, vagina, penis, vagina, penis, vagina. My mom was horrified. She was like, how can I take you places? You know, like,
you're just telling people. You were a sex educator.
I was a sex educator.
That is so cute.
Yeah.
If I saw a kid doing that, I mean, that could be like a viral YouTube video. I love it.
That's the only reason I want to have a kid.
Yeah. Right? So that you can get them, you can train them to say that.
Yes.
Yeah. At the grocery store.
They'll never learn any other word.
Right.
Okay, cool. So tell us a little bit about this book, because then I want to talk about your gigolo book. Tell us a little bit about the history, if you wouldn't mind. It was so interesting.
Wait, first, just real quick. The book is called Buzz, A Stimulating History of the Sex Toy, and it's fantastic. And Hallie also had a really awesome op-ed in the New York Times a couple of weeks back that we linked on our Instagram, which is why we emailed her. And now she's here.
All right. Thank you. So there's so much great sex toy history. One of my favorite, all the people in the sex toy industry are characters. So sex toys go back like 30,000 years to these,
to the cavemen.
Yeah. And of course people say, and there's these things that look like giant dicks from like 30,000 years ago. And people say they were spear sharpeners and stuff like that. Well, why do you need to sharpen your spear on a giant penis?
Right. Yeah.
You can sharpen it on anything.
A rock.
Yeah.
Like a regular rock. It doesn't have to be in the shape of a phallus.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
So back that long. We don't know how they were used. But like one of the things throughout history is you see all these references to dildos and men's fear of them. And that's what the interesting thing is there. Like men are afraid they'll be replaced by a dildo and it's male insecurity. And vibrators. Even today, some men are afraid of that.
But even reading this, it felt like they seemed more afraid of dildos than vibrators.
Yeah, and they should be. It should be vibrators.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I was like, this seems counterintuitive.
Well,
to
because
me.
I feel like a dildo is in the shape of what they are.
Exactly. Yeah. And so,
which is so dumb, obviously, because like you said, like vibrators give us way more pleasure than dildos tend to, and nobody's gonna be replaced if you are like going after pleasure, the pleasure of your partner.
Right. Yeah.
It's a real insecurity. And I think one of the things so about like people being more afraid of dildos and vibrators, dildos have been around longer. So so people couldn't start being afraid of vibrators until the 1800s. But in Masters and Johnson in the 1960s, when the research came out that women could have multiple orgasms with vibrators, like Norman Mailer was like afraid of that. And all these people were like, oh, my God, you know, that's the end of the world. And I mean, in the 1970s, when so like in New York City, the first feminist sex toy store, Eve's Garden, that when that came out and only had three products, it had a Hitachi magic wand, Betty Dodson's liberating masturbation, and another vibrator. But when this store came out and when Betty Dodson started saying like the vibrator could be a symbol of empowerment for women, they didn't need men for sexual pleasure, then men started getting really scared.
Yeah.
And I mean, in part, that's because you can't replicate like no man's tongue works like a vibrator. Yeah. And I mean, they've sold, I don't know if you've seen the sex toys that you can wear on your tongue.
No.
That's like a vibrator. They're like crappy and they don't work well.
right.
It's like this desperation.
Yeah.
You know? And I think my belief is like if humans evolved for female pleasure, like I hope in the future that like men like evolve to develop something vibrating above their dick.
Yeah.
Like so that intercourse would really like give them an orgasm.
Hit all those
vibrating
all those
cock
points.
Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And vibrating cock rings don't really, I mean, there's some good stuff out there. They don't work for me that well.
That's the thing that's so funny is like thinking about how like people, how unimaginative men are to think that like it's one or the other and that they can't be like, oh, wait, they're getting all of this pleasure from this. Why don't we just incorporate this? And then like it'll be better for everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
It's so crazy because I like all of the things.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I like sex toys alone. I like masturbating. I like having regular sex with a partner, and I like having sex with a partner and a toy. So like I don't understand why it has to be one or the other.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean,
that was what was so cool about like reading about Betty Dodson and stuff like that. And also just like in general, I like the fact that she, when we learn about like, you know, more recent feminist history and women and female empowerment and all this kind of stuff, that she is essentially left out of it, which goes to show you how we haven't gotten as far as we think we have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is so important.
Well, what's interesting about Betty Dodson, who was a masturbation pioneer. So she had the, I mean, I don't know if all your listeners will know about her.
Oh, yeah. Tell them about
her.
Okay. Please. So, I was gushing over her.
Oh, she's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
Betty Dodson is awesome. She's still in New York. So
yeah.
She's 90, I believe.
Yep.
She was just on the Goop show on Netflix that has been so criticized. But the one thing that hasn't been criticized is
Betty Dodson.
Betty Dodson.
I was
her
like,
episode.
But I was like, why is she going on Goop? She should come on our show.
Yeah. Let's do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You know, you should reach out to her.
Yeah.
Her email.
Oh, we're gonna.
I can connect you to her. She's a sweet. Well, not sweetheart isn't the right word. She's amazing.
Yeah.
She is badass. But like she like told Gwyneth Paltrow. She was like, don't call out a vagina, it's a vulva. Like on the TV show, she was like, snap. Yeah, so she doesn't give a shit. She's amazing. But no, so she was starting out as an artist. Like that's what she was. She's from Kansas. And she was growing up in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, like she masturbated as kids do or, you know, adolescents do. And she thought like, oh my God, you know, I'm going to get in so much trouble. This is so wrong. I shouldn't be doing this. And then she like got married. So she got married right before she turned 30. And she admitted because she thought she had to. And she admitted to her partner. And this was in the 60s. Like I masturbate. Yeah. And that didn't go down well.
So crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, think about this. And she's still alive and doing these workshops. And so she ended up getting a divorce. So she was an artist doing all these beautiful paintings. she started doing sexual paintings of vulvas and people having sex after her divorce. Amazing. She did this series of virgin whore painting with women in both types. But she got involved in the feminist movement in the 1960s and as the radical feminist movement. And she starts promoting sex positivity. And people are like, what the hell? Like, we don't need to do this now. You know, we don't need to focus on orgasms now. Mm-hmm. We need to focus on liberation. And orgasms are a distraction and masturbation's a distraction. And so
tools of the patriarchy is right what they thought it was.
Well, with sex toys.
Right.
Yeah. So when she the big kind of debut of having, so she started having these masturbation workshops where she would teach women how to have orgasms with the Hitachi magic wand, which Hitachi company didn't even admit was a sex toy at the time. And so she would teach women to do that. And she was like this real pioneer. And when she brought it to the National Organization for Women conference in 1973, it was controversial that she was speaking there. Other radical feminists didn't like it. And she drew the picture for their conference, which is the Leonardo da Vinci Vitruvian man or whatever. Okay. And she drew it as a woman and with a clitoris, and the clitoris was a little large, and that caused a huge controversy. National Organization of Women, they're like, that's a penis. And they're like, we can't have that on the cover. And so, like, it was the clitoral controversy. And then, like, oh, why are we having someone speak about vibrators at this women's conference? That's not good. Speaking about sexual pleasure. So she introduced it, but in the way she positioned it, and this is why, like, men were afraid in a way. The way she positioned it was like this, you don't need to rely on a man for sexual pleasure anymore. Mm-hmm. You can use the vibrator. And that was very controversial. Men were like, oh my God, we are going to be replaced by vibrators. And that wasn't what she was saying. She was just saying like, most women can't have orgasms from intercourse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this gives you another option and you need to learn how to pleasure yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like about learning what works for you and then being able to communicate that with a partner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you can both have better sex together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's, on the one hand, I have three different thoughts. Like on the one hand, I understood it given the time that people would be like, there's so much we have to take care of. Why is this the thing that we care about? But then at the same time, I don't really understand how you decouple sex and liberation.
Yeah.
You know? And then also, I'm curious about the grounds for divorce. Like, I wonder what they said the grounds for divorce was when she got divorced because, like, she couldn't masturbate in this relationship, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Because women couldn't initiate divorces until, like, the mid-70s.
Yeah, no-fault divorce. And I don't know the answer to that.
I'm curious.
But yeah, that's a good question.
And this is based on my other research that gigolos were used as grounds for divorce in the 1930s.
Wait.
Yeah.
Wait, say what now? How?
Because gigolos, which were paid male dancers.
Yeah.
But a lot of times women would fuck them.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And so, well, there were two things that were going on. One, men would hire, if they would want to get a divorce, they would hire a gigolo to seduce their wife. And sometimes the gigolo would just be like, I mean, sometimes the wife would be like, yeah, I'll fuck you. And then they would get the divorce. Other times women were like during the day, like because most women weren't working. Only 20% of women were working in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
They would go out to dance halls in New York, pay a man for a dance because they had these taxi dancers. And
a taxi dancer?
That's what they called them. Because like, it was
take
like
it for, take this person for a ride,
exactly.
Basically.
Like,
oh, that's so my fun.
Like
cool.
That job where they call like a slutty person, like a taxi, whatever. It was taxi dancers. And one was Rudolph Valentino. This, have you heard of him? He's like he was a famous film star back in the 20s and 30s. But anyway, so sometimes they would have sex with these people and they would catch the wives doing that. And that was also like grounds for divorce.
My brain just exploded like four different times.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this book to come out.
I know. I'm very excited about it.
Thanks. Yeah. I think, and I was arguing this at my talk last night, that like we were more accepting of paid sex for women in the 30s and in the 70s and 80s than we are now. Because you can't hire a dancer or someone to like go down on you easily in New York. I mean, it's still illegal.
Right.
But like gigolos were open. Like you could go to a dance hall and just hire one. And then like you can see pictures of dancing close together.
So it was kind of like one of those things that it was like kind of like people pretended it wasn't so that they didn't have to deal with it. Sort of.
And not everyone was fucking their gigolo at the time. But some people were because there was like evidence and people were so worried. Like there were gossip columnists like your wife is going to leave you for a gigolo. Like watch out. And then it was like they're suave. They're handsome. And they were. Yeah. You know? And yeah. So it's just fascinating to me.
Oh my God. I was thinking about how it was, how you got started out.
Oh yeah.
And how it was illegal to sell sex toys in Texas.
So that was like
until really recently.
Like, yeah, that was until 2008. And so I started selling sex toys in 2004. And for Passion Parties, one of the in-home sex toy party companies. And a year after I started, someone from my company was arrested in Texas. And people like wrote, oh, she wore like short skirts in church. And so her community, and I know, like this is Texas drama. And her husband's a swinger. And so that's why she was targeted. I mean, they were swinging. I don't know. But anyway, so she was arrested. And then, so my mom called me crying and was like, oh my God, stop selling sex toys. You're going to jail. And like, I imagined myself in jail and people were like, what are you there for? Like, you know, murder. So and I'm like, I sold a dildo last night. And I was like, so, but I'm like, mom, I'm not going to stop. And if I get arrested, it'll be something good to write about.
That's oh my God.
But that was not, you know, my dad was like, leave her alone and she'll find her own way.
Kudos to dad.
Right?
But anyway.
It's so crazy that like objects like that are fucking illegal. Doesn't make any sense. And like, have strip clubs, this might be a stupid question, but have strip clubs ever been illegal?
Well, so strip
female
clubs.
Strip, like women dancing.
Well, women dancing. So not illegal. So I was just talking about this. Not illegal as far as I know. But there are always these restrictions, like you can't sit on someone's lap. Like you have to be like 80 feet away. So like Stormy Daniels was arrested for obscenity like a year ago for violating one of these laws. And Chippendales in the 70s, so they started in 1979, like male dressers for women, they were arrested for full frontal because when they first started out, the guys who started Chippendales didn't know how to costume them properly. And they're like, oh, just strip down to your jockstrap, whatever. And the jockstrap fell off. Like, dicks were just hanging there.
Right.
And then like the police came and they got arrested and it got shut down 3 shows in. So that's then they started wearing spandex pants.
Right.
Which they ripped off.
The thing that struck me so much about the beginning of your book and the part in Texas was selling the sex toys were, first of all, that like, you know, what your expectations were for who was going to be at these parties. Yes. And it was like church going people.
Yes.
And just how like how fitting it was into classic gender roles of like, it wasn't about necessarily like female empowerment or masturbation or anything like that. It was like, I don't know. It was like just reflective of like people weren't thinking outside of the box, even in that moment when they were doing something that seemed outside of the box. Mm-hmm.
Tupperware party. That is what disturbed me the most. Well, first off, that everyone was religious. That's fine. But it was surprising to me.
Right.
But then the fact that, they weren't. So like our most popular selling toys, there was one that was a vibrator and the other thing was a male masturbation sleeve. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, why is this our most popular toy? At the time, I don't think men were not allowed at these things. So it was all women at these events. Why are they buying this? And it was because they felt guilty that they were buying something for themselves. And we promoted it. We promoted masturbation sleeves as a way to prevent your husband or partner from cheating. So instead of saying, hey, here's a vibrator, you can go masturbate, you can learn about your body, you can use it with him, you can do whatever. It was like, okay, here are sex toys. Like we either promoted them sex toys that would help your monogamous marriage and spice it up. It wasn't about masturbation that much. And then it was about like, here, your husband won't be threatened by this because it's smaller than his penis. Those were some lines like we had to, you know, give. Like if you think your husband's going to be weirded out by it. And and so a lot of cock rings. And then these masturbation sleeves. And then it was like, you know, he can just say, I mean, it was ridiculous. And the fact that we weren't allowed to use because you weren't. We could possibly get arrested if we said vibrator. So we would say like, I know, it was insane. So we were saying like massager instead of clitoris, saying man in the boat, which as I wrote
why
in the
can't
book,
it be a woman in the boat? Women can be captains too.
Why is a clitoris gendered male? Like, at least be non-binary clitoris.
Yeah,
come on. Like, let's do something.
There is a captain in a boat.
Exactly.
And so like these terms, and as I wrote in the book, like I couldn't do it without laughing. I couldn't. I mean, it was like so stupid. It's like, what are you, kindergartners?
Yeah.
Like, why can't we say this? And I did. We did sell butt plugs, and I did convince someone, as I wrote as well, that that men thought butt plugs were great and that she should bring one on our honeymoon. And I still feel guilty.
You like wonder how that went.
They probably got a divorce and they're like, this lady told me I could bring it on my honeymoon. Mike, and he's probably like, you think I'm gay. But it was like, the men I date would never be offended by that. Yeah. But I'm always dating bisexual men. Like, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like a bad choice.
They're like, about game for it.
Yeah. Ugh. But all men, straight or gay, should be into prostate pleasure.
Absolutely.
Like, PSA, well, yeah. PSA prostate screening actually isn't good. But anyway, yeah. We don't
totally
need that
anymore. No, but it's just like fear of homosexuality, yeah, where it's like, why don't you want more pleasure?
Yeah, exactly. It has nothing to do with being gay. If I had a prostate, I would have like a butt plug in 24/7.
Yeah.
I'd probably get nothing done. I'd have no books written. I'd just be like having, you know, pleasure.
I'm actually really curious. So I got my master's a few years ago, and I was like toying with the idea of going back for a PhD, and a good friend of mine's getting her PhD at UT Austin. And I was thinking, and in reading your book, yeah, and like knowing what you did your dissertation, and I'm like, how did, like, academia is like, I feel like such a not accepting in so many different ways of like, when you decided you were gonna write your dissertation on the history of sex toys, yeah, right, how did you just find an advisor who was into it, or did, like, was it a real struggle to do it?
This is like bad. So I had an advisor. I said to my friend, I'm like, let's like look at these people and find out who's the laziest professor who will leave me alone. So we went, I know, this is
that
bad,
sounds,
because
no,
I wanted to be left alone. So we found this guy. He won't be listening to this. Like, he's too busy. He bought this 3D TV when it was trendy a while ago, and because someone at Best Buy, he's probably watching that. But yeah, so I found one, and but even this guy, who was like, seemed very laid back. We just talked about, he was obsessed with Nicolas Cage, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, Nicolas Cage is a character.
He is. I like Nicolas
even
Cage.
Especially good on a 3D TV, I would imagine.
Oh my God. Well, yeah. Like, in that one movie where he's like in a motorcycle, like motorcycle from
Hell, Ghost Hunter. Ghost Rider.
Yeah. Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider. Rider. Ghost Rider.
But anyway, so I told him I was doing a dissertation on sex toys, and he told me not to.
Right.
And so that's like one of those. And I said, well, I want to. And he said, well, you know, why don't you wait to do that until after you get tenure? And I was like, well, no one's getting tenure anymore. So that's probably never going to happen.
Yeah.
And I want to do it now. And if I can't get a job, Chili's Bar and Grill told me they would always take me back. And even though I dropped fajitas twice by misbalancing the tray.
Wow. And they still, I mean, you must
who
have been
knew?
A, you must have been a wonderful employee.
Well, I wasn't, though. But the weird thing was, the first time that happened where I misbalanced the tray and the sizzling fajitas like sprayed everywhere, and I mean, they didn't hit anyone. They were like,
thank
well,
God,
you'll never do that again. And then like 2 weeks later, I did. And I was like, God, I'm so bad at it.
You're like, but, hold my beer.
But yeah, so basically, you might, if you want to get a PhD, you might be told no. But
right,
you just have to have someone who, like, people say that you choose advisors like your parents. And I chose one like my dad, who's very laid back and I can boss around. I chose an advisor like that.
Right.
So,
right.
So that's kind of how
smart
to do it. Yeah. And it depends. I mean, if you want to go on for a PhD, you know, you can find people who will do
whatever
if you want it sex related or
yeah,
whatever.
And just don't take no for an answer.
Yeah, just don't take no. I mean, that's sort
be
of
be like Betty Dodson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sort of been my message, because I was being asked last night about like publishing, turning my dissertation into a book. And I was told publish with an academic publisher. They were like giving me all this advice, and I smiled and thought, no way in hell am I going to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you for all this advice. And then I just did my own thing. And that seems like throughout my life, like, I've just kind of followed my own advice.
Yeah. And it's worked.
It has worked. I mean, I guess it doesn't always.
Right.
I mean, I listen to other people's advice, but
yeah,
if it's,
but you take it and you leave it based on
yeah,
what you
yeah,
have
yeah,
to
yeah,
play out.
And I think that's the way everyone should be.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But yeah, the fact about sex toys still being illegal, like, they're still illegal in Alabama.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we still have this, it's like this fear of female sexuality. And you know, it's crazy that there's some of that to this day. I mean, I think we've become a little bit more liberated about them, but mm-hmm. But there's still that fear, like, throughout history. And I mean, also, like, you know, gay men were sex toy pioneers as well. I talked mm-hmm. about this guy, Dwayne Cole Glazier.
Yeah, the pleasure chest. I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean,
yes, which is in New York, which started as a waterbed store.
That was the craziest thing.
Yes!
Blew my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so, and the store was so tiny that they couldn't even fit a waterbed in there. And so then they're like, well, we need accessories you would have in a bedroom. And this was in 71. And so they had these waterbeds, and then they would have a catalog because they couldn't fit them in the store. And that was like, people were like, what the hell is this? So they had these things on the wall. They started having like bedroom accessories, and then they started having sex toys. And what was revolutionary about them was there were no boutique sex toy stores in the U.S. at all. Mm-hmm. And so they're all sex toy stores at the time had blacked out windows and basically were porn stores that had a couple crappy vibrators and dildos in the back.
And were like super not inviting to women.
Yeah. Not inviting to women. In fact, to the point where they did research like for obscenity for this governmental obscenity commission, and they found like 3% of people in these stores were women. Like a woman, I mean, I've read letters of women saying like, I went in there, the clerk hit on me, which still happens to this day, of course. But at the time, I mean, it was so uninvited. There were guys with a heart on.
Yeah.
You know, it was gross. Yeah. And it was in, because of zoning laws, they were in a really creepy areas of town.
Yeah, they were always up by like Port Authority and stuff like
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like, you don't want to go there. As a woman alone, there are restrictions on where you can go safely opposed to men. So already mm-hmm. you're in this space of town where you don't want to be alone. And then you add to that, like you're in a store, men with hard-ons, all that.
Yeah.
Really, really bad situation. And then the products really sucked because they could get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
So they had like low quality rubber sex toys that had horrible odors. Some of the mm-hmm. people told me, and people, because they were still illegal in a lot of places or marginally legal, no one would complain if they bought a sex toy. It was dangerous.
Yeah, and people were probably embarrassed.
They were embarrassed, and so they got away with selling this crap. And so for Dwayne Cole Glazier and Bill Rifkin, the founders of the Pleasure Chest, to have this store where openly displayed sex toys, that was huge. And initially it was targeted to gay men, and their early catalog, it's beautiful. Do you know Tom of Finland?
Mm-mm.
It's this artist who draws these beautiful, muscular gay men in S&M poses. That's what their catalog looked like.
Oh, wow. I saw the picture in the middle of your book. Right. That's
There's
so cool.
There's a picture in the book. And they all had backstories. It would be like, Steve is a plumber, right. And he'll plumb your hole with this dildo, which is like $40.
Tom, the construction worker, will drill you hard.
Yeah, exactly.
It was awesome. I loved it. It was a work of art. And but then they realized a bunch of women were coming in there, too. And so they started appealing to women as well as these two gay men. And it was this quietly revolutionary thing, but it was during the AIDS era, like it continued on through the AIDS era. And then at that time, what was like heartbreaking to me was people were like going into the store and saying, oh, I think I saw someone with AIDS in the store. There was like a New York Times article when it mentioned that. And then sex toys were seen as like a vector of AIDS. And then Dwayne Cole Glazier, who started out as an ice cream truck driver in LA before starting the Pleasure Chest, which I love that.
Yeah.
And that's how he learned sales. And his nephew still runs Pleasure Chest. The Pleasure Chest moved from New York to LA and then Philly, and it became this huge thing. He came down, he got HIV. He was a Seventh Day Adventist, which is interesting too, because that religion hates masturbation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an irony there. But when he got HIV, his parents didn't even know he was gay. He debated like telling them. He had to tell them he was gay and had HIV. And
oh my
and
God.
That was a huge thing. Like in the 80s, to do that, a lot of parents, when they got that phone call, mm-hmm. never talked to their children again.
Oh,
they wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, it's heartbreaking. They wouldn't go to funerals when their kids died. All this. His parents reacted well, but still, like, well, given the time,
yeah,
still
well
he
enough.
Passed away at 44. And in his obit, it mentioned like nothing about the Pleasure Chest. It said, just said like, oh, he was like a retailer. And so
sanitizing it.
Exactly. Just sanitizing his history. And he was
like,
so
he was a revolution. That's revolutionary.
Yeah. And so, he was really cool. So New York has some great sex toy history.
Yeah.
I
would love for you to tell us a little bit more about Gosnell Duncan.
Oh my God. Yes.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Gosnell Duncan, whenever I'm in New York, I think about him. So he invented the silicone dildo. So mm-hmm. his story is crazy as well. He came from Grenada to the U.S. and he was going to study engineering. And he was working at this Caterpillar plant in Chicago or outside of Chicago. And he was working there and a truck bed fell on him. And he became paralyzed and became impotent. And he was only 37 years old. And at this time, it was like the 60s. And he was like, what am I going to do? I'm engaged to this woman. Now I can't get a hard on. Like, my life is over. And plus, he was such a ladies' man before this happened. He had 5 kids from 5 different, like, baby mamas in Grenada. He loved dancing as, you know, gigolos. He wasn't a gigolo, but it was the same kind of thing. He could have been. He could have been. He was super good-looking.
Suave.
Suave guy. And he, so he, like, went to these, he became, like, a disability, like, went to disability conferences and was like, what can I do for this? No one was really talking about sex. There was nothing going on.
And so, doctors didn't even address it.
And yeah. I feel like that's still the case, though.
Yeah. Yes,
I know. It's really, really bad. It's such an important thing. I talked to my mom. My grandfather on my mom's side was actually had MS and was in a wheelchair, and they didn't, you know, she told me they didn't talk to him about sex. Like, it wasn't brought up, and it was a huge.
It's so insane to me, like, why people think that as soon as you are disabled that you don't have the same needs and pleasures as able-bodied humans. That's mind-blowing to me.
It is. And, you know, in that's why I think sex work should be legal in our country, because in Australia, they have programs for disabled people to hire sex workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we should have that here. So anyway, we had none of that here, and sex toys were, like, illegal in most places. And so Gosnell, but they could be legal if you were therapeutic, or if you were using them, if you couldn't get, an erection and stuff. So he looked into the sex toy business and thought, okay, like, is there stuff for disabled people? There wasn't. And so he just decided to start a company. He was at this, like, event, and he asked other disabled people, would you buy something like this? They said yes. And he, since he was an engineer and he had worked with cars, and he knew a lot about materials, he's like, these materials suck. Mm-hmm. Well, this little material I used, this new material, it was new at the time, silicon rubber, that might be good for a sex toy. And so he worked with General Electric engineers to develop a special silicone, and he started making them from his basement in Brooklyn. And he tried to sell them to the disabled community. Not that many people ended up buying them. He tried to sell them to, as he called them, the transsexual community at the time as well. Mm-hmm. He had trouble breaking in. And how he broke in was he called Del Williams of Eve's Garden and said, hey, I got a bunch of dildos to sell you. And she's like, no, A, you're a man, and men weren't allowed in the store. This was in the late 70s at the time, until a lawsuit.
Okay.
Same with Chippendales. Men weren't allowed in there until a lawsuit. and we don't sell dildos because they're symbols of the patriarchy.
Right.
And dildos were very controversial in the feminist movement, because it's like, if you're fighting against the patriarchy and, like, banging yourself with a dildo.
Yeah,
exactly. And so she let him come into the store, and she's like, oh my God, all these have veins. They look exactly like dicks, because they were, like, modeled on his dick. She's like, I don't want this shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, no, those weren't her exact
so
words.
So veiny.
Yeah, veiny. And she wanted something that wasn't realistic. And she said, look, I may sell dildo in the store if you make it, like, abstract. And she did surveys with people, customers, and they wanted something abstract and fluid shapes, not like balls. And, like, men think women want replicas of their dick.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They don't.
Right.
Like, newsflash, we don't. I mean, we like dick, but this sex toys, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not about you.
No, exactly. And the other revolutionary thing, there were a couple of things, but one was non-realistic colors. So pinks, blues, purples that women thought were pretty. The other thing that Gosnell did was he was dark skinned, and he made dildos in a bunch of different. He at the time, their only, like, black dildo was pitch black.
Didn't fetishized. Yeah, probably
fetishized. It didn't look like black skin at all. So he made all these different shades of black and brown. So he was revolutionary in a number of ways. And so they worked together, and He created the silicone dildo, and it was such an improvement of the previous one because it was non-porous and it could be sanitized. Mm-hmm. And so, especially when HIV/AIDS era came along, it was like the dildo you wanted, and it was the only dildo you could really perfectly clean, and that was a better material.
I thought it was really cool, even to, like, because you included some, like, bits of letters and stuff like that with the people who like. Wrote to him, and it was like writing to an advice columnist, you know? Yes. It was like, my life was this kind of way, like, you really helped me, or, like, these are my problems. And people that really opened up to him, because there wasn't any sort of, like, centralized place for people to go for support.
Yeah, that was what was heartbreaking and wonderful. And this for Gosnell as well as Del Williams was there was no Dan Savage back then. There was no place you would call in. And sorry, I just burped. And to get advice. And so they were, I mean, talk about the level of desperation. Like, he started an advice service because of this, but they were writing to Gosnell through the, like, he would have ads in disability magazines saying, I'm selling dildos and I have this advice stuff. And they didn't know who to turn to because their doctors weren't saying, right. I mean, like, going back to that, their doctors weren't saying this. So here's another disabled person. And they would be like, hey, I don't have any legs and my partner doesn't have any arms. How can we do this? Mm-hmm. And he wasn't an expert in that, but he gave them someone to talk to and bounce ideas off. And it was so meaningful.
And this, cared enough to think about, like, how they could work it out together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this is before ADA and what Americans with Disability Act. And some of these letters, what were heartbreaking is, like, I'm on a college campus and I can't get my wheelchair. And what led me while I was researching this was to talk to my mom. I was like, oh, was my grandfather, you know, how did he get around? Because he was a professor on college campus. She's like, oh, well, I remember as kids, it was so fun. We carried his wheelchair up the stairs. And I was like, wait, there was no way. Like,
there's
it
no
didn't.
Ramp.
Yeah, there were no ramps. And so it was, and they tried to drop him from health insurance because he had MS. So we have come a long way. But my favorite thing in the letters was that they had, he would ask people for the circumference of their penis so he could make a dildo to match it. And so there, And so there were these architectural drawings of dildos or butt plugs that people wanted, and then these little pieces of string in the circumference of the penis, which was just, it was amazing. And I like touched them and I'm like, oh, I'm touching someone's, you know, might have like some trace like penis germs from like 1973.
Someone's dick string.
Yeah, but that's okay.
It's fine. Yeah. It's fine.
I just had one super quick just observation, which was that I had no idea how many Jewish people were involved in the
Oh my
sex
God.
Trade industry.
Yeah, really?
I was like, they're all Jews.
The marches and the Maloruses?
Yes. So many Jews in the sex industry. And in part, that was because it was like, at certain times, it was hard for Jews to get other jobs.
Right, of course.
But then there's also this idea that Jews are more into sex. Like, when I don't think I wrote about this in the book, but when I was selling sex toys in Texas, someone said, came up to me and said, like, oh, wow, you're the first Jew I've ever met. And looked at me with, like, wide eyes.
Someone just said that to me in Louisiana, like, not that, like, 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Man, I'm in a bubble.
I know. New
We're
York
everywhere.
It's like, like, Jews are
everywhere.
I'm
surrounded by Jewish people. Yeah, and I love it.
So lucky.
I am lucky.
But yeah, there were a lot of Jews in the sex industry and in the porn industry as well. And in Chippendales. So there's a whole Well, there's only one Jewish dancer. But there were like the co-founder was Jewish and there are other people. Yes.
Amazing.
And a Jewish pimp, like he called himself the Jewish pimp and he wore a Star of David.
Fantastic.
He came up with the idea.
Fucking
But then he murdered his girlfriend. So like, it takes, who was a Playboy playmate? It takes like a turn for the worse.
Wow.
Sorry. Didn't mean to like take that like end
well, we
on
can't
that.
All be perfect.
And on that note, end of the podcast.
I always like to end our podcast episodes in murder.
Yeah. We can switch. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you so freaking much. This was awesome. When's your book about male gigolos coming out?
I think it should be next year. Possibly the end of this year, but probably next year.
Okay, cool.
But an article about the Chippendales is coming out in a couple months.
So. Oh, awesome.
And I have a gigolo article on BuzzFeed right now.
Ooh.
Feminist gigolos.
Perfect.
We'll link that.
Yeah.
We'll link that. And we'll link
and
to your book.
My
so
book.
Buy
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yes.
It's fucking so fantastic.
Good. Seriously, buy the book. It's so good.
It's really good.
I learned
good.
So much. I took so many notes like in the book.
Yeah.
I didn't want to ruin it because it's also really pretty.
Yeah. Aww,
I like actually wrote notes on the side. It still looks really nice.
Aww.
It. Where can people find you or follow you if that's what you want?
Yeah. It's my name, Hallie Lieberman, on Twitter and Instagram. And so that's those are my main things.
Awesome.
Cool.
So yeah, buy Buzz. That would be amazing. You know, buy sex toys too.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Always
also I recommend Hitachi Magic Wand. I'm old school, but I recommend the...
Can no longer get it at Macy's, though.
Yeah, can no longer get it at Macy's. That's a real shame. Yeah, but get the wireless one.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Why? I'm not doing wires.
Yeah, I would get
No one needs wires.
I don't care how big it is, but it can't have a wire.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing's huge. It's bigger than this microphone, but still.
I just feel like that's like a recipe for disaster because I'd pull it out of the wall at like the, the worst moment.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Have you heard of the new sensation? A
doctor's instrument that sends out vibration. We have the tools. All right, cool. We're going to finish up this episode with a weird dream that Rebecca had.
So in the pandemic, I've been remembering a lot of my dreams. I remember my dreams fairly frequently anyways, but it's been a lot more. And in fact, this morning, I did a little dozing after I woke up. So last night I had this dream that I was having lunch with Mitch McConnell. And I didn't actually end up having lunch with Mitch McConnell because the entire dream was me trying to figure out what the best outfit was for me to communicate to Mitch McConnell how much I fucking hate him. And so I just kept switching outfits. I was in overalls, but they were all clothes that I own. And yeah. I don't have any good clothes to have lunch with Mitch McConnell.
I mean, nobody who has that perfect outfit that says, I fucking hate you.
I know.
Who really
That's
has
a really
that?
Good point. That's a good point.
Really, you should just have a t-shirt that's made that says, I fucking hate you, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, that's true. That would have been the ultimate.
That actually might sell.
Yeah. New idea.
New idea.
The other thing, I was texting with my friend the other day, and we were talking about, like, the people that we don't like and what we want to curse them with. And one of the things that we came up with is, like, having a forever itchy butthole.
I have an almost forever itchy butthole.
It's really annoying.
It's very frustrating.
So, like, imagine if we could, like, give Jared Kushner an itchy butthole for life all the time.
Yeah, I would wish that on him. I'd wish that on most of the current administration.
Itchy butthole.
Yeah, an itchy butthole. Take it. Take it, bitches. Put that in your butt and itch it.
Thanks for listening to Welcome to My Vagina.
It's time for us to slide on out of here. You can find us on Instagram at Welcome to My Vagina.
On Twitter at Welcome to My Vag. Soon to be on Medium.
You can donate to us at Patreon, LiberaPay, PayPal, and Venmo at Welcome to My Vagina.
Yeah, become a monthly subscriber.
Yeah. Yeah, go to WelcomeToMyVagina.com and become a subscriber to our newsletter as well.
You can email us at welcometomyvagina@gmail.com.
We like questions and fan art and jingles.
And suggestions for future episodes.
True.
Check out Jesse's awesome videos on YouTube. Just search for Welcome to My Vagina.
Check out Rebecca's awesome writing at franklyrebecca.com.
And head on over to morebanana.com to check out all of the awesome projects by our production company.
Yeah.
And thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Kate, for being our amazing, dope-ass fucking producer.
Cool.